It is 4:01 and you are tuned into KDNK. It's Friday and that means it's time for oh yeah, that was quite the start. There we go. Now, are you ready? Loosen up. It's Friday afternoon.
Express yourself. Express yourself. You don't never need help from nobody else. All you got to do now, express yourself. Whatever you do, do it good. Whatever you do, 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 Lord, Lord, do it good.
Oh, yeah, do it good. And that's what we're going to do for you this afternoon. You are tuned in to Express Yourself, where arts, culture, and conversations intersect. We are your hosts, Amy Kimberly and
DJ Mama Bird.
All right. And we have
a great show lined up. So don't touch that dial.
That's right. But first, we want to kind of do this weekend would be the 5 Point Film Festival.
Big weekend.
Big weekend here in Carbondale, usually. And this year we are lucky to have a little nod to 5 Point with the drive-in movie last night and tonight. And we're going to hear from them in a little bit. But right now, we're going to start off with a little Wade Newsom.
Dear humanity, I must say you look beautiful today. The tears that I cried have wiped my eyes clean, washing away the mystery from the lens I was given through which to view our history. Today I see your scars, your resilience, the pieces of your broken heart that you have stitched together to make art. I hear your voice, singing louder and louder as the wind from the storm tries to drive it out of you. Chapters have been omitted, pages burned, crimes committed and the guilty acquitted, an attempt to erase the wrongs, the hate is strong. But your love is a beast. Prepared to stand in the path of time and feast on the pieces of history that impede the people's march towards progress. We know the path is long and often comes at you armed with hard times and tough decisions. Hope is not enough. Be persistent. When the days feel endless and the nights seem too impossible to bear, check behind you to see that love is still there, right fist in the air, cheering you on. This is not a moment. This is a movement. Your voice is your weapon. Use it wisely. Be forthright. Despite your instinct to seek solace, speak flawless truth. Without guilt or fear, what you choose to kneel for is what informs the world of what you've chosen to stand for. Remember the times you thought you would never make it through, and then continue. Please continue. Sincerely, you.
That was Wade Newsom. We love him. We miss him. Wade is usually here this weekend, but we don't have him here this week. This right now, he lives in Santa Barbara. He's got several books of poetry out. Check him out, Wade Newsom. We miss you. We love you. We're thinking of you right now. All right. We're going to put on a little music here and then get right back into a great interview coming up. So get ready. Let's do something. We're going to do a piece from a local artist, which doesn't live here anymore, but Ellie Barber. We just love her too. Another local artist that is not with us here in our valley. She's out in California. Why are these people leaving us for California? All right, here we go.
Right. This is DJ Mama Bird. I'm so happy to be here on Express Yourself with Amy today. Such a treat. And I have a special treat. The Storm Cellar Winery is a winery and vineyard just over the hill here in Paonia, owned and operated by two married sommeliers, Steve Stees and Jamie Henderson. Are you guys there?
We are. Thanks so much for having us today.
Awesome. Cheers. Hi. So good to hear you. We're so happy to have you guys on air with us at KD&K, and I know you're so, so busy. I called you in the middle of a tasting, and so I know you guys are super busy prepping for tourists and tasting season, so thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, you know, some may think you have to travel the world to find some of the finest wines, but I have just in the last few years come to find that they are right here in Colorado, and you guys, Storm Cellar, is certainly at the top of the list. For our listeners that aren't really familiar with you, we'd love to hear how you all went from sort of being in the restaurant industry and sommeliers to winemakers, because it says on your website that you traded out your late night happy hours for boots and overalls. Tell us about that.
That's pretty accurate. To answer your question, back in 2016, we were beverage directors for a restaurant on the Front Range. We had been in the hospitality industry for almost 20 years. And we had just come back from a wine trip out in Sonoma, California. And a prominent winemaker there actually asked us what the Colorado wine scene was like. And neither Steve nor I could provide a solid answer, even though we were, you know, wine professionals and curated a wine list of over 700 bottles. We could just name about four wineries that Colorado produced. And so to kind of remedy that, we decided to take a trip out to the Western Slope, and we did an internet search, and we were looking at vineyard sites. Jokingly, I sent an email to Steve while he was working, and I said, oh my gosh, we should buy this. And we had never even been out to Paonia Hotchkiss area.
Oh, wow.
So we went out here, looked at that particular vineyard site, and we were not prepared to like make any kind of offer. But we wrote a business plan on our four-hour drive back to Denver, and we eventually were able to make an offer on this property 6 months later. And that same trip, we brought back a case of 2015 dry Gewurztraminer from Stone Cottage Cellars and immediately put it on the list that we were working at. So we've definitely come to know so many amazing Colorado producers since that first visit out here.
Wow, that is so just so on a whim. That's really brave of you guys. And so I know how that goes.
That was great.
And so you bought the estate from another winery, right? You mentioned Stone Cottage.
That was a winery that we really fell in love with that we brought some of the things back. We did purchase this vineyard from another Colorado winery. It had been planted by them back in the mid-80s, and they'd won all kinds of awards back in the 90s from wines they had made from this property. But via a long story, this property kind of fell off their radar in the mid-2000s. And by the time we bought it, was definitely, we'll just call it a fixer-upper. How about we go with that?
Yeah. So what was that like? I mean, what sort of refurbishing did you have to do to, like, you know, old vines, or were there any surprises?
A lot of surprises.
Yeah, there have been positive and negative surprises. We'll start with negative first. So not to get too geeky, I'll make this the abbreviated version. So for listeners who don't really know how sort of the state of vineyards in the world of wine works today, there's a terrible pest that ravaged the world of vineyards 150 years ago called phylloxera. And it attacks the roots of grapevines native to Europe. Basically, all the grapevines we know, Cabernet, Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, are all susceptible. The only vines that are not susceptible are grown here in the United States. So pretty much the entire world these days is planted where you have rootstock that is native to America that is resistant to this pest, and then you graft Pinot Noir or whatever you would like on top of it. Well, Colorado, unfortunately, thought they were immune to this pest because of their extreme climates. And unfortunately, that is not the case. So our vineyard is not grafted, was not grafted when we bought it. And we found out only a couple months after we moved here that we had that terrible pest in our vineyard. And it is ravaging the vineyard, which is a total bummer for sure. And you couple that with the fact that both of the last two Octobers have been crippling frost. The frost that came through in late October of 2020 is pretty much being called the worst frost that Colorado wine has faced in 50 years. Mm-hmm. It's devastating for the Colorado wine industry this year. So there are hurdles farming at 6,000 feet. You know, we are at the fringe of where grape growing is even possible. And there are challenges to be met when you're wanting to farm at the fringe.
Right. And so being the highest elevation for a winery in the Northern Hemisphere, what rainbows come with that? Are there any besides, you know, all the challenges?
That's a great question. And yes, there are rainbows, literally and figuratively. Where we are in our valley, where we are nestled among about 10 other producing wineries, we are kind of the organic farming capital of the state. And it's a very unique spot. Kind of a banana belt where we get really good winds, which, you know, kind of lessens the, you know, susceptibility for other challenges like mildew or rot. And so that wind, our really highly concentrated growing season where we get a lot of sunlight, you know how it is out here, really allow for beautiful ripening of the grapes. And we're also at a place where, you know, our acidity levels are captured. You know, that's one thing that we get inherently with this area. We get those big swings of warm days and cool nights. And for our particular vineyard, it's really suitable for white wine grapes. We are also planning on producing sparkling wines in the future. And even the soil type out here is very similar in pH and structure to some of the world's best sought after white wines in the world. So Santorini, Greece, you know, you think Burgundy, France, Champagne, those have the same, very similar soil structure and pH as our vineyard does.
And so that's the reason why that Storm Cellar focuses on white wines and rosés?
It's one of the reasons. Dee said we did purchase an already planted vineyard. It was planted with white wine grapes and also some Pinot Gris, which we made into a rosé. So it was already planted with those. They do well. And it's what we like to enjoy as well. But as far as like the kind of grapes you can grow here in the North Fork Valley, they're even different than the grapes that you can grow at about 1,400 feet beneath us over in the other large grape growing region, the Grand Valley.
Okay.
So they can really focus on like Syrah, Merlot, Cabernet Sauvignon, Cab Franc. And, you know, we've not we, but wineries and vineyard owners in times past have tried growing those grapes here. And because of the difference in climate, elevation, you know, we're seeing that white wine varieties do well here. Pinot Noir does beautifully here as well.
Okay. And so I noticed that, you know, your rosé is really popular and has sold out. And my personal favorite from you all is the dry Riesling in your 2019 rosé. What new wines can we look for coming up? Do you have any new plans? You mentioned something sparkling.
We do have new wines coming up. They will not be sparkling wine for sale to the public yet. We need a bigger facility before that happens, but those plans are underway. But we do have some really exciting new wines to release. We're just about to bottle the 2020 vintage. We were hoping to have that behind us already, but just like every year, trying to get labels approved and working with graphic designers is always
long process.
Trickier than you think it's going to be. But we're close. They're approved. They're getting printed. They should be here in about a week, and we'll bottle frantically after that. So we upped our rosé production by about 300% this year. So we're releasing two different rosés in a couple weeks for a total of about 400 cases we'll make of rosé this year, which is very exciting. We're doing some new blends, and we're working with some grapes that are brand new to us. We were really excited in the 2020 vintage to get our hands on some really great Gewürztraminer. We did a dry Gewürztraminer this year. We're doing a Grüner Veltliner, which we're very, very excited about this year. So, yeah, old favorites and new wines for sure.
Well, I'm certainly excited for that, being a big fan of your wines. So, you know, what was it like for a winery that's just a few years old to go through a pandemic? Because, you know, you all have hosted many amazing culinary experiences, and which Amy actually said that she's actually been to one, and I'm a little jealous, but we imagine that not being able to offer those, you know, was really hard, and maybe having some slower accounts that you normally count on, you know, what was that like, and how did you, you know, muster through that?
Yes, so our first vintage was 2018, and we released it in the summer of 2019, and one of the main focuses of our business plan was to really connect diners with chef-driven farm-to-table philosophy, but have that connection also tied with Colorado wine, because we saw it as a missing component so many times, especially on the Front Range. And so we marketed to restaurants. That was our home base. We had a lot of connections. We still love the culinary scene. And you know where this is going with all of the pauses and closures with restaurants. That particular revenue stream basically dried up. It was taken out from us immediately. So we had to pivot in March and April, and we were one of the first wineries to actually do virtual tastings. So we hustled, got together what we called quarantine tasting packs, and we assembled several different wines, coordinated some Instagram, Facebook Lives. We even reached out to some food authors and food bloggers to create paired recipes. And we also partnered with a local DJ, our friend Corey Stanton here at KVNF, and she created some playlists that paired with each of the wines. And so we shipped out, what was it, like 150 of those, at least, of those packs. And that particular revenue stream helped us weather the storm until a little bit. It's not like we flourished, but it tied us over until the opening of the season. And our season was delayed by a couple of months. And we would only host appointment only tastings here, but with the pandemic, we decided to open full time and really just anchor our roots here in the Valley. So we did outdoor tastings. We ordered a whole bunch of umbrellas and picnic tables. And in order for us to pour taste, we actually had to legally partner with someone who had a commercial kitchen. So we partnered with a local chef. Our friend Grant Bishop, who's done a lot of those events that you were mentioning. He's done a lot of farm-to-table dinners here and wine dinners at the vineyard. So he created these charcuterie boards from his commercial kitchen, and we would store them here on site and be able to sell them to guests. And that was what kept us legally able to pour tasting. So a lot of hoops to jump through, but
so really much creativity. I mean, it takes a village, and you guys are definitely showing that. So that's really amazing. I've never heard of a playlist that goes with a winery. I'm going to have to maybe put that on my radar. But speaking of blogging, Jamie, you have a super well-loved blog and Instagram, and I urge everyone listening to go out there and follow it right away. It's called Holly and Flora. And I love following you and seeing all your cocktails, many, many that you make with Storm Cellar Wines. But how do you find the time to do that? And what can a new person that follows you be ready for?
It's funny you should ask, because I just posted a recipe, two of them today. It's making time. I've created cocktail recipes, you know, in former past lives in my bartending career. And so creating cocktail recipes comes naturally to me, and I am constantly inspired by all of the abundance of produce that we have here in our valley. So as far as what to expect, I love focusing on, like, I know this phrase is overused, but you get it, garden to glass cocktails. Mm-hmm. And having a culinary garden in our backyard, having some edible flowers to work with. I love to focus on those cocktails, and then also really highlighting wine cocktails, especially because we're a winery. We're allowed to make wine-based cocktails here at our tasting room. And so it's kind of a symbiotic relationship with what we do. But many times people will be in the kitchen cooking, and I'll be over at the computer or editing photos or testing cocktails. So really, it's a labor of love, but it's something that naturally we're already doing. So it makes sense.
Yeah, and your photos are so beautiful that you post.
Thank you.
Everything. So, you know, you made it through that, you know, we made it through that rough season. Prime tourist season is coming up. And, you know, what sort of events do you all have coming up? And if someone wanted to come check out your winery or sample wines, how do they get there? And what can they expect when they get there?
Sure. So you're broadcasting out of Glenwood. For people who don't know, we're pretty much an hour and 15 minutes south of Glenwood, just over McClure Pass. You head over McClure Pass and past Carbondale and Redstone, and you'll end up in the North Fork Valley. There are, like Jamie said, you know, farms as far as you can see out here. It's the organic hub of the state, so there's lots of fun things to do. You know, you pick farms and orchards, you know, peach groves and apple orchards.
Cheesemakers, goat farms. You know,
amazing livestock, sheep and cattle raised out here, but it's a shifting valley. It was focused on coal not 20 or 30 years ago, and those coal mines have slowly been closing one by one, and the valley's focus seems to be shifting to agrotourism, and wineries seem like a perfect niche market for that. As far as what you can find here at our winery, every Saturday during the summer, during the early afternoon, mid-afternoon hours, we're going to have a chef here making food right on site.
Oh,
so
wow.
It's a great place to come taste some wine and enjoy the views and have a little bite. We'll have a pile of chilled white wines and rosés available for you to taste. We are really, like Jamie said, trying to focus harder on not driving all over the state this year, but trying to really have a home base. So we've expanded our tasting room hours here, so we'll be open 5 days a week. From noon till 7 o'clock all summer long, from Memorial Day through October.
Well, that is so wonderful. And for anyone that hasn't been to the Storm Cellar, you know, Jamie and Steve have an absolutely incredible piece of property with one of the best views. And it's just so relaxing out there. And Steve is great at, you know, doing tastings. And we really enjoy coming to see you all. And I have a really important question. Will you have wine popsicles again?
Yes. So we affectionately call those popsicles bomb pops. So they are the wine-based popsicles. Basically, it's a wine cocktail frozen. You think Otter Pops. And, for example, one of the favorite ones that we made last year was a Riesling lavender honey syrup with fresh peaches and pureed together, frozen. And there's nothing like them on a hot summer day. And we're actually going to be making some non-alcoholic versions so that everyone can have a chance to taste them, including kids. So
okay.
We'll have those. We're also contemplating doing some fun wine cocktails on Sundays as well.
Okay. Well, that is some really exciting stuff and new to you guys. So I just thank you so much for being with us and sharing your story. And we're so happy to know that you made it through and you have some plans for the year. So thank you both very much.
Thank you so much for having us. And yeah, we're excited that we're back for another season again. And we look forward to seeing you again, Allie.
Yeah, and best of luck, you guys. We'll see you soon.
Yes, cheers. Thank
cheers.
You.
Cheers.
So exciting to see what's going on out there in the world of self-producing and going local and utilizing what's around.
That's
and
amazing.
The people are making those choices.
I know. And you and I both love Paonia.
Absolutely.
I think we need a field trip for those popsicles.
I agree. I mean, I love going over to Paonia. It's funny, Sarah Wood, who used to be head of 5 Point Film, she's in Grand Junction now. She's making kombucha.
Yes.
And, you know, it's just all these people are saying, hey, I want to be a maker. And they're making. And those two, their story is a great example of that kind of
creativity,
switch in life and making it happen.
Yeah, they are an A-team for sure.
Well, speaking of A-teams, once again, this show is dedicated to 5 Point Film Festival that would be happening this weekend in Carbondale. And I am going to play, it's about a little over four minute clip from the 10-year anniversary of the 5 Point Film Festival, just kind of talking about its origins. It's different voices. Y'all that know Julie Kennedy will recognize her voice. She is the founder of 5 Point Film. But I think it's just a fun romp around how it all got started. So here you go.
Let's see. What does 5 Point mean to me in one word? Julie. Julie Kennedy. Oh, I have to start over. Wait, was that bad? How much are you getting of me?
I am getting...
From here?
I'm getting...
Tits up?
I remember her asking me point blank, like, Penn, you know, what do you think? Should I start this festival? Should I do this? Yeah, it's a terrible idea, but I think you should 100% go for it.
Well, if you founded this freaking thing, you can say whatever you want,
okay?
I just kept telling her no, and she just kept asking me again and again if we could do it. And I just said no. And Julie does not take no for an answer.
Every pitch meeting we would go into to try and generate new sponsorship in early days, that was really hard. And she would always tell the story of starting 5 Point and how vulnerable it was felt and how it just felt like we were standing on the side of the highway with like our panties pulled down and the cars are just coming by. And I was always sitting there like, oh.
My partner Ben Knight is kind of the exact opposite of Julie Kennedy.
Excited to meet Ben Knight, and the fact that he was coming to the 5 Point Film Festival, I was pretty happy about that.
I think it might have been the after party when he showed up.
He walks into the hospitality room, and I, of course, I've had a few beers.
And she started stuffing dollar bills into his pants forcefully.
Before he'd even gotten a chance to meet me.
You were just on a rampage.
I was just throwing dollar bills down his pants. Maybe we don't want to use that, do you think?
I can't talk about that.
5 Point is Christian Fulk playing dodgeball.
There are short shorts, ponytails, cut-off t-shirts, tube socks.
Casey was the CEO of Patagonia, and he decided he would take his shirt off. So at that moment, everybody took their shirts off.
A room full of these adventurous men all ripped their shirts off.
I just remember walking by the cops, and they weren't upset with us at all. They were kind of impressed with our party.
The world's best town and 5 Point, they come together and kick some ass.
That feeling of sitting next to someone and sharing that emotion. And that you can't get that through your phone.
When the lights came up, like half the audience was bawling their eyes out.
It just gives me goosebumps even saying it right now.
It's where it all began. My career, so many of my dear friends, I met at 5 Point.
It is the circling of the wagons, it's the gathering of the tribe, and I just have never experienced that anywhere else.
In one word, I think of community.
To have a place to be together with retail.
Home. Family.
Heart. No, heart. It means heart.
Yeah, 5 Point to me is family.
It's just tried new things, and it's never been afraid to fail, and there's not a lot of pretense at 5 Point.
It places its biggest emphasis on community.
And we all share these incredible lifestyles that we have in one venue, in one experience.
Everyone experiences the same powerful, kind of curated symphony of films. And that proves to be one of its greatest assets because everyone's speaking the same language throughout the weekend. Everyone sees the same great stuff.
I mean, it's been 10 years, but it still feels like 5 Point's kind of new.
So 10 years is a long time. Here we are. Here you are. I've been to the 5 Point Film Festival 10 years. Whew, that's a big one for me to say.
Thank you, Five Point. Thank you, Julie Kennedy.
Happy 10 years, Five Point.
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 Thank you, Five Point, for giving me so much in my life.
Yeah. Happy 10 years. That was 3 years ago. We are now, this I think would have been, had we been able to have a festival last year, and would have been the 13th, I believe.
Wow, that was an amazing clip.
Oh, look, we've got, let's see. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, Amy Kimberly. It's
oh my gosh, it's Regna Jones from Five Point Film Festival. Oh my gosh, thank you for calling in.
Yeah, of course. I'm here at Axe Babe.
I know
you. Downtown Carbondale. We're throwing axes with the team and the board of directors and some filmmakers.
Fun
so it's
team building.
Fun.
Oh my gosh. It feels, it's like at least a little nod to bringing people together, which is what Five Point does so well, is really brings the community together. And last night and tonight, you are bringing community together in a different way, as well as connecting virtually from there. Can you just tell our audience a little bit about how they can get a taste of Five Point?
Yeah, definitely. So as we know, normally the festival happens this time of year here in Carbondale, but due to COVID restrictions, we're looking for an in-person event in October. So we decided that we would pop up with an Earth Day event, and we built out our first ever drive-in at the Roaring Fork High School. So last night and tonight, unfortunately, we're sold out, so people can't join us if they haven't already gotten their tickets for tonight, but we are putting the program online, and people can watch it on demand all of next week.
And how can they do that?
Just go to our website, www.fivepointfilm.org, and you can get your tickets there. It's played on the virtual platform of Eventive, just like we did for our virtual festival last year. And buy your ticket, and you have a week to watch, and we'd love for people to participate that way and get some Five Point love and some great films about the environment and stewardship of our beautiful planet.
And you guys did a great job. It was really fun because even though everybody was in their cars last night or just right outside on top of their cars, it was fun because people would have to show their appreciation by honking their horns as opposed to clapping.
The new normal.
So
it was fun.
Yeah. Could you feel the love? Could you hear it?
Yeah, we definitely could feel the love. It was a little strange being up on stage and not having, you know, the pulse of the crowd and all of that that we're used to. But at the same time, when people were honking, just knowing that people were enjoying themselves in their car and that we were able to, you know, do something new was really exciting.
Well, we really appreciate that you have made that attempt. And can you just let us know the dates in October?
Yeah, so the 14th annual flagship festival will be in October the 13th through the 17th here in Carbondale, and we're planning on an in-person event, so fingers crossed.
Wow. Well, be careful with those axes over there.
Okay. We will.
I hope the professional has showed you how to throw them.
They have, and, you know, I'm not that good at it, but I'm doing better with the actual, like, little throwing stars that they have or saw blades.
Ah.
That's my forte.
I thought maybe you were going to say you were doing better with the cocktails.
That's my forte.
Well, that too, but, you know, we're on air.
No. Well, have good luck tonight. It looks like the weather is kind of opening up, just like last night. It was horrible weather up until we had to go there. And then it was a beautiful sunset, and people could see other people and wave from cars. And it creates the new community in the new way, and we appreciate you doing it. So thanks so much, Regna, for calling in and for keeping 5 Point alive.
Thanks, Amy. We'll see you soon.
All right. See you soon. Bye. There you have it, folks. You know, it's hard to keep any of us down. It's live music's coming back, festivals.
I know. Red Rocks is just announcing dates and, yeah, lots of things to look forward to for live music.
That's right. And I feel very blessed that people are creating. I mean, a lot of times it's those creations that kept you going through this time. I mean, I did watch 5 Point back in April when they did a virtual festival, right. And I thought they did a really good job. They had the different filmmakers chime in from wherever they were in the world, and back then you felt so disconnected from everything.
It feels better now, and that's like the silver lining, right? That challenge your mind to see how creative you can be for your craft.
Well, we got a real treat coming up. And shall I start with this musical story? Is that the...
Sure.
All right. We're going to start with a little piece from...
STS-9.
There you go.
Gonna be like
a musical story, yes.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, dramatic with yes. Music. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this, man. Is this gonna be one of those, one of them?
Yes.
Yeah.
A musical story. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I had the great pleasure of sitting down on the phone with Alana Rocklin, bassist for STS-9, and we aired that part one interview a couple weeks ago. We had to take a little break for our spring membership drive, but we're back to intro part two with Alana Rocklin, bassist for STS-9. We get pretty deep and, yeah, it's just interesting to hear, you know, the ways that they had to be creative and transition and pivot, and especially for a huge music touring act to stop a tour and go virtual. Yeah, big challenges. But Alana is amazing. She's the queen of bass. So enjoy this part two with Alana Rocklin. Well, this is Express Yourself, and we are talking to Alana Rocklin, bassist for STS-9. Alana, as we know, being in this pandemic for a year now, musicians have been hit so devastatingly hard without having any venues to play live music at. When you and your band members and management learned that this was indeed going to shut things down for quite a while, what was that conversation like amongst your team?
It was, I honestly think it was like what I imagine everyone's conversations mm-hmm. were in life at that moment, where there was all these just like incredible unknowns. You know, thankfully for us, we played, you probably know, you might've been there. We played the Belly Up in February. Mm-hmm. We had one show, Bicycle Day show in San Francisco. So that was kind of a local show to us, you know? But other than that, we weren't going to play until the end of May. So when everything kind of shut down, thankfully, you know, we weren't on tour, and we weren't, you know, we had friends that were, you know, already on tour with all their, you know, production and all their stuff, and had to cancel shows and, you know, right away. And so thankfully we didn't have that scenario, and we weren't really sure at that time. It was kind of like, well, will we be able to make the May show? We were going to do Hotel Elsewhere in Florida. And right. So we were kind of like, well, maybe it'll be okay by then. You know, no one really knew at that point. And so it was like this kind of conversation of like, you know, what are we going to do and how are we going to do it? And I think, for us, you know, we felt really, like I said, really grateful that we weren't in a position where, you know, people had been planning on seeing us or planning on working or whatever, and we were, and it was like the rug was coming out.
Right.
We had a little bit of leeway there, but no one knew how long it was going to go on. And so it just felt like every week, you know, we talk all the time, we talk every week, and so every week we would talk. And I think for us, you know, a big part of our conversations were about, you know, we wanted to make sure that we were tuned in to what the world was going through and making sure that we were encouraging that safety, you know, and with so many unknowns. I mean, now, you know, a year later, we know so much more. But at that time, it was just all those unknowns, and we just want to make sure that we were, you know, being safe. And that's, you know, we don't want to put anybody in harm's way. So
right.
that was where we were coming from, and what we have been kind of letting us lead us this entire year.
Yeah, well, thank you for leading the way, because you do have such a huge fan base. And so thank you for being such great role models. We've entered this sort of Zoom mania where we are learning to connect more through computer screens and sadly less in-person connection. I saw that you were offering music lessons through a platform called Live Music Masters. Was that started because of the pandemic, and are you still offering that?
Yeah, that totally was. It was actually started by Mark Brownstein, Brownie, you know, of the Disco mm-hmm. Biscuits. And he called me early on and us in the band and just said, you know, I'm starting this lessons platform. Would you want to be a part of it? And, you know, it was like an immediate yes for me, because I used to teach a lot. That was kind of part of what I would do in my Nashville life. And so this was a really cool opportunity to get back to some teaching, which I love to do. And now that platform has actually changed. It's actually called Go Lively now. GoLive.ly. And it encompasses all kinds of things. So you can take lessons. We're going to be doing our shows on there. You know, there's all kinds of opportunities to learn new things. But yes, I'm still giving lessons. I also do like chill sessions where you can just log on and we can just hang for 20 minutes and just talk for people that, you know, maybe aren't interested in learning the bass.
Wow,
but,
that's wonderful.
Yeah, I've actually even taught some other instruments, people that are, you know, maybe I had a young woman who studied with me who played violin. And so it's been really a silver lining of the pandemic, just getting back to teaching and connecting with people, connecting with fans. And it's been really great.
That's great. And so generous of you all to donate your time too. In August of last year, we watched as California suffered tremendous loss from the CZU Lightning Complex wildfires. Many of your fans learned that, sadly, you and your family, your husband Brad and son Max, lost your home to the fires. And I was so heartbroken myself to see that, and I am so very sorry. You seem to have stayed positive and still as inspiring as ever while going through likely the hardest moment of your life. How are you all doing now, and how are you transitioning?
Oh, man, thank you so much. It means a lot to hear that. Sometimes life just happens, and that was one of those things. I mean, we did not, that was the furthest thing from our mind that could happen. And so, God, it was, you know, just dealing with the fire on top of the pandemic was, you know, unreal. Mm-hmm. But it was honestly like everybody we just felt so supported and loved. And that a lot of that was coming from the SPS9 community and fans and just people. And honestly, just to say they, you know, it's all that love and support that got us through it. And, you know, we're still working through it. You know, it's a long-term thing, but we're definitely feeling great. We're feeling, more settled, just incredibly thankful for all the support and love. I mean, just from, you know, people just sending us messages or the GoFundMe that fans mm-hmm. started, or, you know, any of the things that, you know, happened through that is what really got us through. I mean, honestly, you know, you don't really think that you need help. Or I'm not someone that wants to ask for help, but it was just given. And that was the beautiful thing about it. And sure. So I appreciate you asking that. We're doing fine. We're just, you know, we're just changing as life changes.
Right.
And, you know, that's how it goes.
Moving along. Well, we're so happy that you all are safe and that you're doing well. And what a testament to how important you are to the fan base to show support like that. Not only was the world going through this pandemic and you and your family were dealing with an unbelievably difficult time, but social and racial injustice was at the forefront of 2020. We saw the murder of George Floyd right before our eyes, and the nation erupted from there. You've been very outspoken on your social media, not just about racial inequality and suffering, but also social injustice, women's rights, and our 2020 presidential election. Do you feel you have more of an obligation as someone being in sort of the limelight with this built-in platform in terms of followers and fans to really speak out? And what inspires you to use a loud voice for advocacy of these issues?
You know, it's interesting. It's, you know, I've always been on Facebook from before I was in STS9, and so I have a personal page there, and I also have my music page there. And I feel like the personal page is really, it's my page. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have people that follow me on there that are fans, but I also have, like, my family and, you know, people I went to high school and college with, you know, my childhood rabbi, or, right, you know, just all kinds of people that I connect with through that personal page. And so the personal page is something that where I'm aware that I do have maybe more of a voice than I used to. I think where I try to come from it is from a place of, like, if I wasn't in STS9, would I post this? Because sometimes it's actually the opposite, where you feel kind of like, maybe I shouldn't post, as, you know, as the basis in STS9, maybe I shouldn't post what I think about this.
Sure.
And that's kind of dangerous to me. You know, I think that's not what, I don't think that's what STS9 stands for. I don't think that's what music stands for. I think, you know, musicians have always kind of been outspoken. It's only been in recent years with social media that people are more afraid to say, because they don't want to have that backlash. But I really feel like that's my personal page.
Mm-hmm. You know? Right.
I have a really deep connection with social injustice, and that's part of me as a human and what I think I'm here on this earth to speak out about. And so I try to be choosy about it. I try to be sensitive about it. I don't try to, you know, overpost, but when there's things that, you know, that really mean a lot to me, I think that's what I think about, is like, okay, if I wasn't an STS9, would I post this?
Right.
You know, and oftentimes it's a yes. It's like, yes, you would, because no one would, it wouldn't be such a big deal. I come from a place of like, you know, we don't have to agree to be cool, that, because we've really gotten far away from that. It's like, you know, as a country.
Right.
So that's where it comes from, and hopefully it's not, you know, I feel like, well, if someone doesn't want to follow my personal page, that they don't have to. They can follow me on my music page, and we can talk about music over there. And so, yeah, it's important, though. It's
yeah.
important to me, you know, especially like women's rights. You know, I mean, you know, we've just been under assault the last few
yes.
years. Yeah, I mean, I need to say something. You know, I can't just say nothing, you know. So that's where it comes from.
Well, thank you for using your voice and for, you know, the outreach. I think it's so important to continue to have that conversation. And in a non-pandemic world, you're on the road a lot with heavy touring and some runs being 3, 4, 5 nights long. How do you incorporate family time into that as being a mom, a wife, and also a rock star?
A good question. It's a challenge. It's always been a challenge. Like I said, I have like an incredibly supportive husband who has always wanted me to keep going. You know, when I had my son, I stopped playing for a while. I actually didn't think I wanted to play again.
Wow.
Sort of like, I'm done. I'd done all these things. I toured the world. I accomplished a lot of my larger goals at that point, and I just thought, well, you know, I think I'll not do this anymore, not sure. And, you know, one thing kept leading to another, and I found myself, you know, having opportunities to do things, and it would be like, should I do this? Should I not do this? And, you know, thankfully I've had a lot of encouragement to do it, you know, to keep going. And I think playing the STS9 has been a wonderful part of that, because it is people, you know, we are all caring of each other and each other's families. And so it's, you know, we're thinking about that, you know.
Right.
You know, it used to be that we might do a 6-week tour, you know, 6 weeks straight, you know, which we don't do anymore because all our kids are getting older.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a delicate balance. We try our best to, you know, make it fluid. That's been honestly one of the gifts of the pandemic is that we've all, you know, gotten to be with our kids for a whole year, which is just incredible. An incredible gift, you know. So, you know, I think it's just the support that I have, and I'm lucky for that, just even with my family, but also with the band and band members. And, you know, I try my hardest to really be home. When I'm home, I'm home, you know, and I'm not, I'm really focused on being a mom and being a wife. And, you know, it's not to say that it's easy, but, you know, nothing in life is easy. So, but we make it happen.
And there is that silver lining of being able to be with each other more during the pandemic. We are coming to a point where vaccines will be available to all who want them by this summer, and we're seeing musicians start to announce tour dates. We know that you all have a Red Rocks run on the books that comes with some cautious optimism. What can we look forward to with STS9 for the rest of this year? And what do you and your band members expect that very first show will be like after a year of not playing live music?
Well, we know when we play together, it's just going to be magic, right? It's just going to be so cathartic and so incredible for everyone. You know, we miss playing as much as I feel like the fans miss us. I think it's mutual. It's been hard, you know, it's challenging when you have, you know, your outlet, the thing that you, you know, like for me that I've done my entire life and all of a sudden that's kind of snatched away from you. It really puts a lot in perspective. All those times that you might've been on the road that you were wanting to go home
right.
or whatever, or have more time or, you know, it sort of puts it all in perspective. And so, you know, that's always healthy to have that. You know, I say this to people all the time, and I think it's really true, is that, like, we know about as much as everyone else knows. I think, you know, I think there's this perception that maybe, like, you know, oh, we know all this mm-hmm. information about when we're going to play again that you don't know, but that's really, really kind of not true, which is that, like, right now where it is like, I think you said it, cautious optimism. Mm-hmm. It's like, everybody's really thinking that we're on the right track. Like, okay, vaccines are going to be available to everyone. And we're going to be able to get back to it safely. And so now we're just in that waiting game of just like, okay, everything's been going in the right direction. Is it going to continue to go in that direction?
Right.
And so every week it's changing. Literally every week we're getting new information, new things that are happening that make, you know, that kind of can help us really make a final decision about what's going to happen. And so that's where it is. It's still in that kind of zone. And so I hope that, you know, everybody just continues to do, you know, to be safe, to do the things that we need to do to get it back to where we, you know, we can safely come together and have a great show and nobody feel nervous or scared or anything like that. I'm cautiously optimistic. So that's,
it's the only way to be.
Yeah.
Well,
exactly. It's changing all the time, you know.
Sure.
And of course, it's state to state too. So
exactly.
there's that. You know, we're trying to like kind of navigate it all, but I think we're getting there.
I think we're getting there too, and I just can only imagine what the energy will be like when you all are on that stage again together for the first time. But you heard it from Alana fans. She does not know more than we all know. So patience, and we will get there. Alana, how can we further support music or any projects that you may be working on?
Oh, wow. Well, definitely, you know, look me up on Go Lively and, you know, watch out for Sub ID coming with some streams coming soon. We're really excited about it, about that. You know, we've got some really cool STS9 things about to be coming out, and we're really excited about that stuff. we've been working on all kinds of things, and we're excited to share them. They've, you know, been marinating, and we're working on new music. We are in constant contact with each other. So, you know, rest assured that stuff is happening. So,
yeah. Well, we look forward to that. Cannot wait. I just thank you so much for your time today, Alana, and opening up to us. And I personally cannot wait to see you all on stage again. I do have to send you off asking a question from one of our KDNK board members and major fan, Max Scott. Who is the better bassist, Derek Smalls of Spinal Tap or Jemaine Clement of Flight of the Conchords?
Yes. Well, I'm gonna have to go Spinal Tap, Derek Smalls, because for me, I'm a little old school. I love Spinal Tap. Like, we actually just watched it as a family.
Oh wow!
Recently, just like a week or two ago, and that, I mean, I love Flight of the Conchords too. Don't get me wrong; they're hilarious and incredible. But yeah,
tough
Spinal
question.
Tap all the way.
All right. Well, thank you, Alana, and best of luck to you and the band and to your family for the rest of this year. And thank you for all of your inspiring words and your outreach. And we just so appreciate your time on this little community radio station here in Carbondale, Colorado.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for having me. It's so fun.
Aw, what a great experience to be able to talk to someone that in depth.
Yeah, honestly, an experience I'll always cherish on a personal level.
I love that. Well, great, great, great interview. And what an awesome weekend we're all looking at. The sun is coming out, kind of.
It's
supposed to warm up.
Yeah, it is. It's good. We need the moisture, right? We had a crazy fire summer. We need it.
Well, you guys, we did miss Pulse of the Planet. We are so sorry. But we were just having too much fun. So we hope all of you get out there and have some fun.
Have a great Friday.
Great Friday to all of you.